with Patricia, and I asked her to join me today because I wanted to, for me, to get to know her more. And she does a lot in the community. I've followed her for a while now on social media, but it was time for us to finally meet and sit down and have the conversation. Before we got started with recording, we were actually talking a lot about identity, and identity being a Latina, Chicana, and Patricia, can you tell our listeners a little bit about you?
So my name is Patricia Guayo, and I was born and raised here in San Diego in this border city. I became an artist at about 14 years old. Both my parents are from Mexico, and so I'm, you know, Mexicana. But we, you know, at home did all the things that you do in a Mexican home. We, you know, heard Mexican music, watched the novelas, all of these things. But outside of the home, you know, there was this, this assimilation, like you need to be American, you need to look the part, speak the part, so that you can be successful in this country. And so when I went on to junior high, I had a little bit of a culture shock because I was bused out to an all-white school in University City. And when I got to junior high, I realized, oh, no one is looking at me as like, oh, this American girl, you know? Yeah. They're looking at me as like, oh, this little Mexican girl, this brown girl. And so I started to ask, you know, lots of questions. You know, I started to do the whole family tree thing, you know, trying to figure out who I was, what the roots look like. And, you know, when I did that family tree and I found that my mother was from Mexico City and my father from Guadalajara, I was like, whoa, like, these are deep roots. Yeah. You know, what now? And so I started to, you know, research certain things, and I had this teacher who introduced me to the word Chicana. So there was an alternative, you know. It wasn't like, oh, you're Mexican or you're American or you're Mexican-American. There was this powerful word.
Right. And this whole new term, right?
Right, you know, and, you know, at the time I was like, what does that even mean? You know, like, so I asked her, what does that mean? And she's like, well, you know, she explained a little bit about the movement. And, you know, I think I was in like, I must have been like in maybe 8th grade, I believe.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, in 8th grade. And so, you know, from there I went on to do the mechas and, you know, became the vice president of the Mecha, graduated high school, went on to, you know, community college. But during all of that time, I really wanted to know a little bit more about our people. I wanted to know a little bit more about those roots that felt disconnected,
yeah,
but at the same time connected because of the traditions and, you know, the things, right, that my parents had taught me. And so, you know, I just dug deeper. I just dug deeper and deeper, and I began to identify as a Chicana. I began to go to rallies, you know, and do all of these things. But out of all of that, I think one of the things that truly helped was, you know, starting to paint at 14. You know, when I started to paint brown faces. And I didn't want to paint anything else. And I think that spirit guides, you know, that's spirit guiding me. That's not, I could have painted flowers, I could have painted trees,
right,
I could have painted anything. But
right.
Yes, but it became this infatuation of getting the faces right, painting brown indigenous women and painting them right. And so, you know, that's, I think, where the journey really took off.
And you were only 14.
And I was 14. And, you know, again, like, I'm a teenager.
Right.
I'm a chola. I'm doing things in, you know, here and there.
Right.
You know, and so it's not constantly happening. But I think when I realized who I was when I was maybe in my early 20s, you know, and I thought, okay, we're done with high school. We're done with all of these things, you know, and you're still wanting to be an adult at that age,
right,
you know. And so I realized, like, oh, yeah, I'm a Chicana. I can claim it. I can say it. And, you know, that's hard because it's just as hard as when you're an artist or you're a poet or you're a writer. You don't want to call yourself any of those things unless somebody else calls you those things first.
Yes.
You know?
It's almost like you're looking for validation,
right,
from someone else, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so I had my first solo art show at Chicano Perk, which was a coffee shop here in Sherman. I think it's like Sherman Logan. And that's where I had my first art show, and I painted, even the calacas that I painted were brown, and so they were very, I was happy about it. I was like, I'm going to paint all this brown skin, that's all I'm gonna say. It was,
yeah,
you know. And so one of the key things that happened, I think Miss Barrios was her name, which is a trip, you know. I think Miss Barrios for introducing me to the term Chicana, but I also thank my little French pen pal. So when I was in seventh grade, I had this little French pen pal, you know, and you know, you like, you write back and forth, you know, and they...
That's so old school, by the way, for the young people. They're like, what?
Yeah, they're like, what? What's a pen pal? So what happened was, you know, they asked us to, you know, mail each other a picture. And so, of course, like, I mail a picture, you know, you mail your picture to your pen pal in France, and she mails me hers. And she writes me back, and she says to me, you know... Oh, I thought you were American. And I was like, well, wait, what?
Whoa.
Like, I am.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And so at that point, I thought, oh, shit. You were expecting me, because I'm American, to have blonde hair and light skin.
Right.
You know? And then she says to me, oh, you know, I just thought you were American. And she stopped writing me, and I thought, like, what the fuck just happened?
Really?
You know?
Okay.
So those pieces that can be a little hurtful have also contributed to this identity piece. And I think at that point, like, it was so clear to me that I couldn't deny myself. You know what I mean? There, there comes a point where it is so clear to you that you can't deny it.
Yeah.
That you're like, oh, shit, like, wait a minute. I'm more than I've been. I'm more than this illusion that, you know, maybe, you know, this education system has been trying to brainwash me with. I tell people all the time, you know, the education system in the United States, their job is to create patriots. So when you see Latinos out there who are, you know, waving the American flag and doing the most to be a patriot, that's what the fuck the government is supposed to be doing. When you are, I don't want to say conscious enough, but when you are on a different path and you are moving away from those things because you realize that you don't want to be a patriot, that's where you find your Chicanos, that's where you find your other, that's where you find your activists, that's where you find, you know, people who have uncovered different things. They haven't been led by, you know, this patriotism that is supposed to be who we are, you know? But, you know, it's just an example of, you know, identity pieces. Those people aren't necessarily wrong. They just haven't found a different path, and that's okay. You know, that's really okay. That's what this country is supposed to be. So don't be surprised. Don't be surprised when people are trying to tell you there's a melting pot and you're just not falling for it. You know, don't hate them for it. Do your work. Contribute in the way you're going to contribute. Fly your flag, whatever that means, you know. And so it's very much taking me years to, like, really not be angry at those people.
Yeah.
Taking me years to not be angry at the system, you know?
I mean, and that's what we're talking about before we started recording, too, was, you know, the fact that anger was the thing that drove me into creating platforms, right? And I'm happy that I got angry enough at our administration to want to make a change locally, right?
And
in my community. But now, I'm done with that. I'm done with being so angry at the system and being so angry at people that were, you know, I grew up with that were my friends, and all of a sudden they're like supporting Trump and putting things on their Facebook that was directed towards me with them not even knowing it.
Right.
And then thinking like, oh, it's okay to say that to Erica because she's not one of them. But yes, I am. Like, what do you think I am? And then I started feeling like maybe I'm not representing myself the way that I'm supposed to be. Right? Like, maybe I'm not putting out there who I really am. And so I had to start digging deep, right, to, like, get that and then, and we were saying earlier, like, and then be able to put it out and do it with compassion and passion, right, so that my deliverance is different, you know, now.
Right. You know, and your delivery is going to be what it's going to be, but it's who you choose to deliver it to, you know? It's almost silly to fight with people who you already know don't agree with you.
Yes.
Because, you know, again, speaking about celebrating who we are, they're not going to celebrate with you. There's going to be resistance.
Right.
You know? And so, you know, surround yourself with people who are going to celebrate you.
Right.
Who are going, I mean, why wouldn't you?
Right.
You know? And every so often, you you are going to meet and hear from someone who completely disagrees, whether it's because they're hating or whether it's because they just don't understand what it is you're trying to do, or whether they think it, you know, what you're doing is, you know, a waste of time.
Right.
You know, but you know, you're gonna find those people, and you very kindly let them go and be on their way. You know,
right.
You don't have to argue with them.
Right.
There's no need to argue with people who aren't willing to unify. That's what I'm saying.
Right. It's like that whole thing that I've been told to you about, like, planting your seeds in fertile ground. Right. Like, don't just give your seeds to be put all over the place. Like, if you're gonna plant that seed, make sure that ground is fertile and ready to water it and nurture it and ready to grow, so that we all listen to each other, we all grow together. Right?
You know, and sometimes taking it even a step, you know, back, you don't always have to plant the seed yourself. Sometimes you have to, like, you know, let me hand you the seed, and when you know your ground is fertile, you plant it on your own. And then those people who decide to plant later, because not, you know, it's not always the right time, but they hold on to some of those seeds, and when they decide to plant later, what happens is, you know, you'll hear from them, when you thought they weren't listening, you know, or you'll see them, you know, activating other spaces or saying other things or speaking about something you touched on, or maybe you didn't, but you know that, you know, oh, we tried to have that conversation, and I see that you're there now, like, you know. And again, this isn't about levels, but it is very much about paths.
Yeah.
And so how our paths cross and how our paths align is super important, because those are the people that I believe, you know, we're guided to in order to uplift each other. That's why there's no need to argue with people who, you know, aren't seeing eye to eye with you, you know, because for what?
Right, and I've literally had to stop conversations at the very beginning of someone coming at me, because I was right away, I've had to stop and say, you know, we don't see eye to eye, so why are you now coming at me? Because now I just feel like you're attacking me. If you already know we're not going to have a discussion, we're not going to see eye to eye, then I just feel like you're coming at me so that you can be aggressive with me and come down on me, and we're not going to get anything out of it. Now, if we're going to have a conversation, we're both going to listen to each other and respect our differences, I have no problem having a conversation with someone like that. But as soon as you come at me aggressively, I don't have the energy to, like, calm you down and then be able to deliver.
And those things will pass. You know, what I've seen in my life, in my 42 years, is as time goes on and on and on and on, the more I confirm with the artwork that I create, with the presentations that I give at schools, with the work that I do in the community, with being an advocate, the more that I confirm my purpose, my passion, the more that, I mean, people have less questions. I walk, you know, into a gallery. I walk at the park. I walk wherever I do, and people who know me know what the fuck I'm about, and there's no question about it.
Right.
There's no question about it. If you're gonna question me about it, let's be prepared for a debate.
Right.
You know, and a debate is simply gonna end in that's who I am. You know, but you know, you gotta walk the talk. You know, you just have to. And the more that you do the work that you do, the more that people are gonna stop and go, oh no, that's what she does.
Yeah.
You know, it's no longer going to be a question.
Yeah.
It's not, ladies, it will no longer be a question.
Yeah.
It's going to be like, oh, that's who the fuck she is.
Right.
You know, and that's the best part about it. Because you're not in competition with me. I'm not in competition with you.
Right.
We are simply owning who we want to be.
Right.
We're simply reaching for that higher self, Patricia, that higher self, Erica. You know, and that's it. That's it, you know. And I'm telling you, the more you do the work, the more people are just going, like, oh, no, that's what she does. That's what she is.
I mean, I feel that seeing your art is also getting to know who you are, right? Like, your art has so many words in one piece that it's just, like, it's very forward. You know, it's very forward in who that artist is. You look at your stuff, and whether they don't know you, you know, they can look at it and know what you represent. To me, that's so beautiful, to be able to look at something and just know what that person is conveying and what that person is, you know, putting out there. Tell me about getting into being a muralist and doing the art of what you do. How'd you get into that? Like, I know you started and you had your stuff up at a coffee shop, but being a muralist seems to be, like, on a different level. You know, can you explain that?
Yeah, you know, it's these are things that you don't just fall into, you know?
Right.
Some of these things have taken some really, really tough life choices and some real risks, you know? In 2012, my daughter was 5 and my son was 2. You know, and I had a full-time job at Scripps Chula Vista, you know, checking people in, that front desk kind of stuff. And a lot of people were like, oh, that's a great job, you know, stable,
yeah,
teach the kids, you know, I was married, you know, to my baby daddy. And so I realized that I had anxiety and that I felt trapped. And I felt so trapped that I would go home and I would say to my husband, it's your fault. It's your fault. Like, I don't want to be with you. This isn't working out. Like, I felt so trapped. What I realized after really internally looking was that it wasn't anybody outside of me. It was me.
Right.
It was the fact that I wasn't creating. And it was the fact that I knew that in order to feel better, I had to create and I had to give and I had to contribute. It was like my medicine, and not just in the creation itself, not just painting, but sharing it, because that's the purpose. I could paint a dozen things and keep them all to myself, but for what, you know? And so it was about sharing the message. So I did something very bold. You know, we had a mortgage and we owned a house, and I calculated all of my budget and all that, and I went to my husband and I said, hey, you know what, I'm going to quit my job and I'm going to work part time, and the other part of the time I'm going to be an artist. And he looked at me like I was something crazy.
Yeah.
And so I quit my job. I became, you know, I got a part time job to cover the absolutely bare minimum that I could cover, you know, as far as my finances. There was no extras. And the other part of the time, the restoration at Chicano Park was happening. So I go to work from 8 to 12. I take my painting clothes with me, and I would leave work so happy because I knew I was going to come to the park and help with the restoration. The restoration in 2012 with some of the other murals, and they had already started, and I was not going to be leaving until they allowed me to help paint, you know, on the Chicano Park wall. There was no way. I insisted and insisted, and I ended up, you know, being able to paint. I'm after cleaning and scraping walls and, you know, doing the hard work, you know, and still today doing the hard work. I have to prep my own walls. I got to do my own stuff. But, you know, I worked really hard to earn even, you know, a single paint stroke on those walls. So after some time, Tommy Camarillo asked me if I would redesign this temporary mural. And I said, absolutely. She said, you know, it's not a big deal. Like, it's temporary. I said, okay, I got you. I knew it was a big deal. And maybe about a year later, after I redesigned it and had a lot of my friends here in the community help me, you know, paint along with me, because I wasn't going to do it by myself, she called me and told me that our piece was going to be permanent. And so it's in the permanent collection at Chicano Park. It's a four-sided mural by the kids' playground. Now I have a second one coming, you know, on one of the bathroom walls there, but I got to raise funds for it, so that's part of my fundraising stuff. But that's how I became a muralist. So after I left, after I did the restoration and all that good stuff and was at Chicano Park, and it started to get more involved, there was a job opening at the San Diego Museum of Art, and I applied for it, and they gave it to me. Was quite a blessing, because I was a project coordinator for their public art program for 4 years. And so I got to do another mural on Lemon Grove alongside with Miguel Angel Godoy, who was our lead artist, but, you know, and along other community members, just absolutely amazing work.
Wow.
Yes. And then we got to do a radio station here in Barrio Lomas called Radio Pulso del Barrio, which, you You know, I, as a Chicana artist, my highest honor and privilege is to paint in the park. I don't ever have to paint another piece, because when I think about Chicana Park and I think about what it represents, I realize that it's archived and it's in every Chicano Studies history book all across the nation and in the world.
That's what I kept thinking when you were talking. I was just like, wow, this woman has created her history, like major mark in like the history of Chicano Park and Mario Logan, and it's just an amazing thing. Like the energy that comes off of you when you're even talking about it is so pure.
Because I love it. You know, I love it, and you earn your stripes. Like this isn't like, oh, I just showed up to Chicano Park and I got to paint. Like, oh, I had to work my ass off.
Right.
And I had to show them that I was gonna be consistent. That I wasn't going anywhere, you know, that I was willing to contribute labor, you know, financially if I needed to, you know, that, you know, everything that you do there is on a volunteer basis.
Right.
Nobody pays you for your time. Nobody pays you for your material. Nobody pays you for the paint. It is truly a labor of love.
Right.
And so to be, you know, it's time away from my children. It's time away from my family. And to be able to do that, you know, and do it and be focused about it, it's got to mean the world to you.
Right.
It's got to mean something much bigger to you. And so many people have done it. There's no reason why there can't be more of us, you know? And, I, you know, I absolutely love, I love where I'm at, you know? I love that I was born and raised in San Diego. I love that I get to speak two languages, you know? I love that I get to pass all of this on to my children, you know, that they understand the meaning of Chicano Park. There is the importance of Chicano Park, not just as a park and the murals, but, you know, further than that, it's peace in the movement.
Right.
What it represents in the movement, the Chicano movement. So, you know, this takeover of land, this park where only the Chicano Park Steering Committee flag flies, like,
right.
You know, those things are major. They're major, and so many people who have been a huge part of the Chicano movement, like Corky Gonzalez, have, you know, have been to the park, and it has contributed to the park in their own way. So, you know, it's really a dream come true to be a part of a much bigger, you know, a much, like, a, I don't know, an extended movement, you know?
Right. What are you doing next? I know you have so much stuff going on.
Up next is, every year what happens is, for me, from January to about June, it's kind of my downtime.
Okay.
So I get to do what I do. I get to do what Patricia Aguayo does as far as my personal stuff, my art, these kinds of things. You know, as I said, I'm the executive director of the Sherman Heights Community Center, so I have my job, but there's not a lot going on at the center at that time. Come August, from August to the end of November, we have Día de los Muertos. And so we're on our 25th anniversary here in San Diego, obviously, you know, for Día de Muertos. And we have altars that are created by community members. And we have a huge festival and a procession that comes from Sherman Heights and unifies Logan Heights and then Barrio Logan and Chicano Park. And so, you know, planning those things is the next thing. So that's what my year always looks like. There may be like some exhibitions in early January, seasons of art and then seasons of community. So, you know, we're moving into Día de Muertos, and that's really what'll be next for me.
I'm really excited to experience that because I worked at a cemetery for a while here in San Diego, and for Día de Muertos, we always had an event there, but I always wanted to do so much more with it and grow. But we were limited, right? We were owned by other people and stuff, and we couldn't be on our own and do what we wanted to do. But every year, we would always go to Old Town because it was like happy hour, and we'd go get drinks.
Right.
And the last year I had went to Old Town, I looked around and I was like, I feel like a tourist in my own city. Like, why am I here? And then I had friends that were in Sherman Heights, and they were like, you need to be here. Like, like, I know that that's like your little spa. You guys go there every year, but no, like, you need to experience this.
You and know, what we do in Sherman Heights is cultural preservation. It really is. We don't charge for any of the altars. We have community members, about 32, that come to us and set up their altars for their families. and wait by the altars for their families to come. We have a velación. We also do student tours. So the local schools come and we do an education piece where the students sit down and we talk about the altars and the elements on the altars and the spirituality piece. So, you know, we do a lot. We don't just put it on for show.
Right.
We're not Coco with a movie. We don't do those things. And those things are good. Those, you know, the movie's fine. I think it's great. But the movie doesn't relay that I, Patricia Aguayo, put up an altar for my grandmother and wait for her to come. I burned the sage, I burned the copal, I have the danzantes bless the altars, you know, they do a teaching piece, they do the velación, so it's a huge community of us that, you know, put this together for cultural preservation, for our own traditions to stay alive, and so it's, that also is beautiful work for me, you know, like, to be in a position where I get to, you know, lead a lot of this, and not just lead it, but, you know, make sure that it is not being commercialized,
yes.
You know, that's huge. I feel like it's my responsibility to be there and, you know, preserve a lot of these things that are happening.
Right, and I like that you said that too, like just the preserving, you know, the culture and what Dia de los Muertos represents and what it means. Because last year I worked with a company who did their event and it was their 10-year anniversary. And when I went around to schools telling them that we did an altar contest at this thing and we would try to get the high schools involved, I got a lot of shit back from people, even though
as
I was volunteering.
Sure.
I was right, and
as you sure.
It was
right.
Because I thought what they were doing for our community was good, right? Because
right.
I was seeing the good in it, and I was seeing like, oh, they take this money and they donate it back to the school. This is their way of giving back.
Right.
I didn't understand the breakdown of what that meant. We were doing culturally. Right, and I didn't understand the breakdown, so I'm going around to mostly charter schools and stuff, and I felt bad after that. I did, because I was like, wow, I did not see what I was doing myself by being involved in that,
right.
Because I was, you know, trying to see the good in it and trying
right.
to, like, take this in, and I was honored that I was asked to help with this
right.
in the first place, and then I quickly realized by actually going out to the community, this isn't what the community wants. This is not what they need. This is not what they want.
Right.
So it's a different feeling to, like, take that back and go, wow, okay, I need
yeah.
to rethink, like, where I'm going and how I'm participating
yeah.
in this and how do I uplift what we're trying to preserve.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm really glad that you said that you guys take it to the next level of giving these students tours and letting them
right.
know, like, what this is actually about and not, it's not such a commercial.
Yeah, you know, we, I mean, Sherman Heights, Sister Sherman Heights has done from the beginning. I came, you know, about 14 years ago to Sherman Heights through the hospice that I worked for,
uh-huh.
you know, and they have never, ever sold an altar or, you know, made it a contest. It's always nice to have these really beautiful, outrageous altars, you know, but it's so much nicer to have a simple altar that is dedicated to a family member
yes.
and have a family around the altar.
Yes.
It's when you come to Sherman Heights and you see the work that we do, people get to put on their altars whatever they choose to. You know, we don't specify, we don't say it has to be elaborate, we don't say any of that. You know, some people don't have money to make it an elaborate, you know,
right.
Altar, but yet they're willing to share the experience with us.
Right.
They're willing to share the experience with you, with the people who are coming through.
Right, while they're still
you know,
honoring
right.
the people that have passed in
right.
their family.
And, you know, and so my altar, you know, for my grandma, it is a little bit elaborate, you know, but that's what I did for my grandma.
Yeah.
I didn't do it so that people could say, oh my God, look at that altar.
Yeah.
I did it because I knew that she loved the Virgen de Guadalupe, and I know that, you know, I'm honoring her as I'm working on this altar. And every year when I put up this altar, it never fails. There's a moment where there's this grieving process that happens.
Absolutely.
You know, and you
yes.
can't sell that.
Yes.
You can't sell that. You can't not only not sell, you know, the culture of it, you know, but you also can't sell what comes, the spirituality, you know, the weird shit. shit that goes on at the center when all the altars, you know, are in place. You know, the footsteps that you hear, the lights that flicker, you know, the candle that goes off by itself, you know, the papel picado that moves when there's a wind, you know, all of these things that happen, you know, it's an experience, you know, it's tradition and it's an experience. And what I tell people all the time, I guess the best way that I can put it is I literally sit there and wait for my grandmother to come, and I wait for her to come and feel her energy and for her to give me a sign that she's there, and she does every year.
On such a different level. Last year I went and traveled by myself and went to Aguascalientes, and I went during Dia de los Muertos because I wanted to, after I was taking that step back from what I did here, I wanted to go experience and be grounded, right, and feel rooted and stuff. And it was like that. It was like literally just watching families get together and waiting for their loved ones, right, and waiting for that presence. And it was a powerful thing. And I didn't feel that being involved in other cemeteries that do celebrations, and even in the cemetery where my family was at, right, because it was very commercialized, right? So I didn't feel what I felt there, you know, and to know that you're part of this creation that creates those moments for these families is really just, it really just blows my mind that you're able to do that and provide that for people too, and provide that space, you know, for them to feel comfortable enough to share.
Right. That. You know, that's it's really important. These spaces, these community spaces are ours. So we become gatekeepers. We become gatekeepers, and we decide what happens in our spaces and what doesn't. And some of us forget, you know, some of us, you know, again, like, when you see that someone is giving back in a way, you know, you don't, sometimes we don't think it all the way through, and then it becomes like, oh, shit, we're harming this.
Yes.
So myself, you know, with the procession, I have to look at it, and I have to say, what are, you know, as we're bringing all these people down, we know we have people from the outside coming in.
Right.
That's okay. But what I want to see are the people who live in these homes coming out. That's what I want to see. So we make sure that we flyer from Sherman all the way down to Chicano Park and let people know, look, the procession is coming. It's actually coming through your street. Even if it's not, bring a picture of your loved one. It's for our community. The streets belong to us. They don't belong to the police. They don't belong to the outsiders. They belong to us. So what we do and how we manage and how we put out the word to our own people is super important. You know, social media, not everyone has social media. We literally have to flyer the neighborhood.
Yeah.
We really do.
Which is awesome. Like, again, doing something for the neighborhood and then bringing them into it, right? And offering, again, those safe spaces for them to feel comfortable to do that. I definitely want to volunteer with Sherman Heights this year. Definitely want to get involved and stuff. And I mentor a girl in a program. We've been together 3 years, and she's always looking for more things to get involved in. She's 15 going on 16. And we've done a lot of community experiences together. But I know that would blow her mind. It would be such an honor for us to be a part of what you're doing. So I'm pretty excited, you know, to do that. You, with raising funds for your mural work, what's the next thing that you're raising funds for? Is for, you said, another part of Chicano Park?
Right, so a second mural in Chicano Park.
Okay.
Which requires a city permit, a timeline.
Yeah.
You know, and again, as I mentioned, it's a labor of love, so I have to buy my own material, you know, my own paint, all that good stuff.
Yeah. What else do you have coming up that the community should know about? Are you doing any more fundraising from now?
Well, I'll be selling t-shirts with my artwork on them. I'm actually going to be out here in front of Gold Rose Tattoo later on today.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
okay.
So I'll be there. And so I'm just, you know, I'm trying to raise these funds by printing my artwork on these t-shirts. So,
yeah.
You know, you get something back for your money, but then you're also helping me with my mural.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'll be painting more things that will be for sale, you know, but it's just easier to sell a shirt for $25 than it is a painting for $700.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. And you said you're going to be out there today in front of Rose Tattoo. What time?
Well, Rose Tattoo, I will be there from about 6 probably until 8.
All right, so you guys heard it. So come out and come support and help us raise some funds. What message, coming to the end of this episode, what message do you want to leave the listeners with about either community or identity or the artwork that you're working on?
I would really like to say that we all have different platforms, and our contributions are really what matters. So, you know, if you're wanting to get involved, if you haven't known how to get involved, like, reach out to someone, you know, create your own platform. You know, my platform is in the arts, and, you know, and being creative and being an artist. Your platform is in your podcast and in writing, and, you know, all these other things. And so we all have a way to contribute, and I think that that's most important.
Yeah.
How we contribute, how are you contributing?
Right, and I'm glad that you mentioned that too, because I don't think I mentioned that enough too, is letting people know, like, use me as a resource to get in contact with more people in the community, to do more, because we're as powerful as our people are, right? And so we need more people coming out and more people sharing. I think there's so many people that have all these different gifts, and now's the time to, like, really put it out there, right? And everybody in this, especially in this community, is so supportive. I always say it's so awesome to go into these shops and see people selling from people that are across the street from them.
Right.
Such a beautiful thing to see that community feel, even when they're trying to support themselves and make money. They're always leading with community first, right? Like, the money will follow, those other things will follow, but if you do what's right for your community and do what's right for you, all those things will come into play.
And, you know, the other piece is there's different platforms. It's not always a public platform, so, you know, there's organizations that need your help, there's volunteer, you know, capabilities, there's so many things.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for coming and meeting me today, because, like I said, there's people that I've connected with that, you know you, and we're just like, please connect with her, please let more people know who she is and what she's doing, and I see why, like, and you're right, because of how you lead with everything, it just literally comes off, and you're sitting here, like, I feel everything that you're talking about, and I feel that, and that's really special. I don't know how else to put it, but that's special, girl. Really special. So thank you for tuning in. Can you give everybody your Instagram handle so that they can follow
So my Instagram handle is arte.aguayo.
So follow her. If you have any other questions, reach out to me and I will connect you with her. But thank you, everybody, for tuning in, and